This Week in Radio Tech, episode 253, is brought to you by the new Omnia 7 FM, HD, and streaming processor with Undo technology, by Lavo and the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Console. Crystal Clear is the radio console with a multi-touch touchscreen interface. And by the Telos Alliance with LiveWire Plus. LiveWire Plus brings 15 years of AOIP development and practice along with AES-67 compatibility. Hey, where will the next broadcast engineers come from? Hofstra University in New York seems like a good source. Mark Silverman is a student, and he's the student director of engineering at WRHU-FM. Mark joins Chris Tobin and Kirk Harnett to talk about learning broadcast engineering by example and by doing it. Hey, welcome in. It's time for This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack. I'm glad that you're with us. This is the show where we talk about radio technology, usually engineering stuff, sometimes a little bit of management and philosophy. And we talk about anything from, you know, the microphone, I know I keep tapping that, to the light bulb at the top of the tower and everything in between, including AM and FM transmission and streaming and digital stuff and even old analog stuff. So we have a good time here. Well, I'm in a different location than usual. You can see I'm not in the usual Twerked studio in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm at the world headquarters of Delta Radio and South Seas Broadcasting in Las Vegas, Nevada. That's where I am. It doesn't really matter where I am, though. Chris Tobin will be joining us in just a few minutes. He's getting connected. And I'll be introducing – let's go ahead and introduce our guest right now. He's standing by. We'll start talking in a minute. At the last minute, we had a little change. First of all, to let you know that a fellow named Jeremy Ruck was scheduled to be our guest today. And he had an emergency to handle. He's on the road right now, so he couldn't be with us. He's going to be on a later show. And Jeremy is somebody I really want you to tune in for. He is a fantastic broadcast and consulting engineer from Peoria, Illinois. And I've known Jeremy for a long time. He's done some incredible work, and he'll be joining us on a future show. But we have a real treat for you. You know, I love talking to younger engineers. I love getting them on the show. And Chris Tobin suggested we talk to this guy, Mark Silverman. Mark, welcome in. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for filling in so quickly and being our
guest.
Absolutely. I'm just delighted. We met for the first time about 15 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad to have you on the show. So tell you what, Mark, we're going to, as I say, keep our powder dry for the big interview. But tell me real quick, what's your title and what station are you at and where is it?
So I'm currently in Studio North of WRHU-FM here in Hempstead, New York, 88.7 FM on the FM dial. My exact title is Student Technical Director. So I work with the Chief Audio Engineer, and I'm in terms of fixing things from everything from working with our computer systems to fixing microphones, pretty much everything. It either runs through me or runs through the Chief Engineer.
Awesome. Awesome. And do you guys have some television work there as well, or is it all radio?
So WRHU is strictly radio. We've been radio for as long as the station's been around, since I think the early 40s. But the school we're within the Hofstra School of Communications, so the School of Communications also does have a television program as well, and we do some work with them every once in a while.
Cool, cool. Well, I see a TV monitor behind you there in the studio. And
yeah,
I was kind of wondering about that. It looks like one of those high-dollar, expensive 4x. Well, we used to use them all the time in studios.
Of course,
4x3 monitor.
Of course, that's actually the security monitor. I turned it off because
okay.
No one wants to see outside. But to the right of that is our actual nice flat screen that we can get Hofstra Television and use it. We've done stuff with them for sporting events. We actually did last month we had a live band on the television side, and we actually simulcasted it onto the radio. So we used our different equipment to get that on air.
That's a great opportunity. That's cool. Hey, well, we're going to be talking with Mark Silverman about his journey in learning about broadcast engineering, what got him interested in that, and, you know, how he, you know, got into what he's doing now, and then where he's going on from there, you know, what he has to look forward to. So I'm really curious. See, the learning process to me is fascinating. I learned by beating my head against the wall a whole lot. Yeah, I learned how electronics work by getting shocked a few times, right? Learned where all the electrons hang out. So Mark, stand by. Chris Tobin's going to be joining us soon, and we're going to have a great conversation about about the learning process. And you know, just how we get to where we are, because I've kind of forgotten. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by my friends at Omnia, and there's a great new brand new, being introduced at this NAB show, the Omnia 7. Now, a lot of folks love the Omnia 9 processor, but you know what? It's a little bit spendy. Yeah. Now, if you're, hey, if you need what it does, you know, you can afford it. But, you know, stations like mine, smaller, small market stations, I'm not sure that we can afford an Omnia 9. Well, the Omnia 7 has so much going for it. Built in, inside, it's just amazing. First of all, with the Omnia 7, you're not paying for stuff you don't need. So if you want to add, say, parallel HD processing and streaming, or if you want to add RDS capability to it, you can add that. You can license those things and add those. But if you don't need them, you don't pay for them. So the Omnia 7 processor, designed by primarily by Leif Claessen, but also great hardware design by our staff of engineers at Telos at the Telos Alliance. It has a list price of under $6,000, and that is truly, truly amazing. So, what doesn't it have that the Omnia 9 has? Well, let's see. The Omnia 7 tops out at a 5-band processor. So, you know, if you want that 7 bands that the Omnia 9 has, you need to get the Omnia 9. But if 5 bands will do you, and for most people it will, check out the Omnia 7. Also, the Omnia 7 does have built into it this fantastic undo technology. This is what takes records, you know, songs that have been maybe a little overprocessed to try to be loud, you know, on an MP3 or a download, but it's really kind of clipped. Well, the Omnia 7 has the undo technology built into it, just like the Omnia 9. And this is really some fantastic tech that makes the song, you start out your processing with a much cleaner sound. And on some tracks, it makes a huge, huge difference. Some beautiful pre-processing in it, 3 sections of automatic gain control before you even get to the multiband processing. And something else that's key in the Omnia 7, it does have Leif Claessen's stereo embedder. Now, this is a little bit different concept than a stereo generator. And what it does, here's an analogy. It gives you a room that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. Crazy. It can give you, can make your mod monitors read up to 140% left-right demodulated audio, still keeping 100% total composite modulation. That, what that means is you can run your FM station perfectly legal and be louder on the air because of the way the stereo embedder embeds the left and right channels into the composite. It's amazing. It's so cool and such a great idea. Lots more things to find out about it, too. So if you would check it out, go to the website. Easiest thing to go to Telos Alliance, telosalliance.com. Click on Omnia and then click on the Omnia 7 and read all about it. Hey, I'm going to be doing a video about it in the coming weeks right after NAB. And so we'll explain more about it. But you can get your hands on one now. They're shipping right now. The Omnia 7 from Omnia Audio. Thanks, Omnia, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right. Hey, Chris Tobin, are you with us?
I'm here.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're plenty loud. Where are you today?
Turns out the studio setup I was on Wi-Fi, and I believe it was going through 2 hops because I started noticing a few things when I restarted the machine. So I've come to the terminal room, as you can see behind me, the punch blocks, the traditional 66 blocks, and I'm quickly threw Skype on a PC, got my headset out of the bag as my emergency backup, plan B, and here I am.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's great. Boy, you know, the mark of a great engineer. That sounds like MacGyver. You just MacGyvered that situation there, didn't you?
Well, I have my little travel kit, and in it is all the headsets for the, you know, ultimate, oh my goodness, everything else has failed. Let's see what happens with a USB device, and it works.
Wow. Hey, Chris, I got to warn you. I got to warn you, today I had to be on battery, and so it looks like I may not make it through the whole show. You know, this 5, 6, 7 hour battery in the MacBook Pro, that only counts when you're not doing anything. So I'm I'm powering the Focusrite, and I'm doing all, you know, it's not going to last the whole hour. So you're going to be finishing up the show with Mark Silverman. And speaking of Mark, I forgot one thing. Chris Tobin, you're the proprietor there at ipcodex.com. Tell us where people can find you.
Real simple, straightforward, support at ipcodex.com. It'll get to
all right. All right. If you need advice on IP Codex, that's Chris's expertise, video or audio. All right. Mark Silverman is here. We got introduced to Mark a few minutes ago. Mark, man, start where you like. I want to understand how, first of all, how you got interested in you know, the engineering topic as it relates to broadcasting. This is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, well, it's, I guess, for me, would start back in, I would say, high school. My high school had a little tiny TV radio, TV station, I should say, only internal. But for some reason, I was always just fascinated how it all worked and how everything connected with each other and how basically it all became. And then, lo and behold, Hofstra, which was nice. My dad actually was here at the radio station back when it was WVHC. This was back in the 80s. And he kind of has, you know, throughout my years growing up, has brought me around the station, seeing what has gone on, what we've done. So, you know, ever since growing up with Hofstra and ever since high school, really, I've wanted to get into radio. And it just turns out that, you know, it kind of fell into understanding computers and realizing, hey, computers can do a lot. Computers run most of this radio station that, you know, you need people that can actually do the engineering part behind it. And I realized from an early age, I'm not really the person to be on, you know, on the air per se. But I was always fascinated how the fact that I can push this on button and all of a sudden I was on the air. So that's why I kind of folded into it when I joined the radio station as quick as I could.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So so at Hofstra, now, you know what, Hofstra, you guys in the Northeast know all about that. But for those of us who know nothing about Hofstra, we're, you know, SEC fans here. Tell me about Hofstra and the tradition of WRHU radio there. I know you've been picked as a, like, the best college station in the country, at least.
Yeah, we won. Yeah, well, last year, well, 2014, won the 2014 Best Non-Commercial Radio Station Marconi Award, which was absolutely awesome. And we were voted Best Non-Commercial Radio Station from the Princeton Review, which was really cool. We've had WRHU, which used to be WVHC, and all the way back to pretty much the start of Hofstra. It used to be something called Hofstra, the Hofstra Community. Had a little tiny, I think it was maybe 5-watt FM transmitter on top of the Playhouse, actually. And up until, I believe, the late 1970s, early 80s, they were still broadcasting from on top of the Playhouse. None of these studios that you see, the one I'm in or any of them at Hofstra, really existed. And over the years, the program has just kind of grown and exploded. And honestly, it's probably one of the best things that I've been involved with ever. And really, Hofstra has, you know, building the School of Communication back in the early 90s to integrate television and radio. You can be a television major, you can be a radio major, and they really give you a great opportunity to kind of figure out what you want to do with your life and get into the broadcast industry.
Are there other engineers, other people that work with you, students that are interested in broadcast engineering, or are you kind of a lone wolf there?
For the most part, I'm a lone wolf. I've been told that I'm the most critical lone wolf that we have at the station, especially when sports decides to not act, you know, act up and not actually connect on the road. But for the most part, I, you know, there isn't really a per se, you know, there's no degree towards this. There's no specific, you know, I guess you would say, motivation for other people. Because a lot of people, when they come into the station, they want to be on air. And the nice part about WRHU is that, you know, once you go through the training class, you can do whatever you want. If you just want to host a music show, you want to do sports, news, talk radio, pretty much anything. There's a little bit of it all for here at Hofstra, which is awesome. And then there's the engineering field, which, you know, anybody who wants to come involved, I've always been more than happy to show them around. And that's kind of how I got involved, is the technical director before me kind of showed me around when I was in the training class and said, hey, you know, this can all be yours and you can kind of pick up on all of it. And that's kind of how I slowly became in after we did the training class, which was awesome.
So aside from, you know, being at kind of a high level, a lot of encouragement, it sounds like your website looks great. You have a lot of student participation, a lot of fun. So on the one hand, it's, I guess, is the programming kind of typical college programming?
We try not to be. We do have a little bit of everything. We have morning talk radio in the morning. We have top 40, alternative music, classical music, jazz music. It is kind of, yeah, I guess it is kind of your college altogether, you know, you have everything. However, we do, because we have the training class, I, at least me personally, feel like we kind of up our quality a little bit. And since we have a long history, we also have past engineers come and help us with the on-air quality. We have great people that actually work with us. One of our professional in residence who actually helps us, his name is Ed Engels. He was at CBS tons of years. He's done everything in news, sports. He's probably what I would call a legend in CBS news radio. And he's kind of guided us in terms of speaking on air, how to work at different press events, really everything quality-wise. So to me, we sound pretty good. But I mean, I can understand why everyone says, oh, we're a college radio station. But
Well, hey, if you wouldn't mind, now it's been a few years actually since I think I've been in a college radio station. Take us on a little verbal tour of your station equipment wise.
Sure.
In your pictures online, I see lots of Electro Voice microphones, and I think I see a Harris digital console. But kind of give us an idea of what's going on there equipment wise.
Well, I wish it was a Harris digital console. These are all Electro Voice microphones. Every studio, we have two studios. We have a main on air studio, which is Air Studio South, and the backup on air, which is the studio I'm currently in, Air Studio North. All of them are exactly mirrored with each other. So basically, to the right of me, which you can't really see on camera, I have a Pacific Research and Engineering analog and digital console that basically runs the entire station, along with a selector from RCS. That's pretty much our, in terms of equipment, what we use for the main on-air product. From core-wise, we pretty much, besides selector is really what does it. Then we have ISDNs, with their all Telos basic ISDNs. I think they're Zephyrs. Telos 1x6 for the phone system. Mm-hmm. And what's really nice is through the router, you know, like other big radio stations, we just recently upgraded our RCS system to the point where that we can actually go on air from the backup studio fully, which is something that kind of fell by the wayside in the past couple of years. And now we can actually have a run, basically do maintenance on the main machine in South and be completely still on the air. And North, which is pretty awesome.
You know, I'm sorry to interrupt you on the tour here, but that's that. So often that's the case, right? Where all the focus goes into, you know, one on-air computer and everything, and then you have a problem, problem, and you end up playing CDs from the production room for 3 days, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, we have a nice wall of CDs that we've done plenty of. I cannot tell you how many times we've done shows of CDs. Selector used to be not as stable as it is now. Ever since we put in new hardware, we built new computers for it, got everything upgraded to Windows 7. We only went to Windows 7, I want to say 3 months ago, which was pretty crazy. And now that we're fully on Windows 7, now the fact that Studio North, which I'm in, is an actual duplicate of the other studio, has been, you know, there's been a lot more, I guess, redundancy really is the word for it, which is something that I don't think in my now three going on 4 years here have seen.
Gotcha. Yeah. Hey, Chris Tobin, have you been to the facilities there at Hofstra?
Hofstra, WRHU. Let me think. Yes, I have actually.
A little bit. Okay.
I've actually been working with those guys for years when they were back in the smaller studios in the basement of a building.
Good. Okay. Well, thanks for not making fun of me. I didn't know.
No. I'm only kidding. No. Mark knows. No, I've worked with the guys over the years. I'm one of the engineers that come from time to time from industry to help them out. And I was there way back in the day when Jeff Krause was the student, I guess, the faculty member that was moving the broadcast curriculum along and instilling in the university that there was something to be done here. And this was what was that 20 years ago now that I think of it,
if not more.
If not more, yeah. And the new facility that Mark's talking about and he described was built as a result of Jeff's leadership and push to make it happen. And now their current general manager, Bruce Avery, is carrying the torch and moving it along. And it's really – it's a great program, and the students have access to so many things. It's amazing.
Hey, I'm sorry. Maybe I just missed it. But you said your consoles were not digital. Which consoles do I see?
It's a Pacific Research and Engineering console, actually, here.
Oh, okay, okay.
Hopefully you can see. There we go. That's.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sorry, I didn't recognize that. Okay.
It's the airwave, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. And then what – when I have been to college stations, the engineer was typically really worried about his audio processing and said, hey, I've got students that just run the board all over the map. You know, some think minus 20 is the right level. Some think plus 5 is the right level. So what do you guys do for processing? And, you know, how do you adjust that processing so that it's accommodates everybody?
So very recently, actually, we did upgrade our air chain. Probably about a week or so ago, we put in a compiler to kind of level out all the audios. All the levels going out to the transmitter. And then at the transmitter itself, we finally got a Omnia, not one of the new ones that you were describing from before, but probably from, I think, late 1990s. And since then, the levels have kind of been pretty consistent throughout. What's also really nice is through the training class, it's about a 6-week program that everybody has to go through. And we have to teach, you know, they get taught proper level taking, making sure that, you know, everything sounds good, listening off air, listening on air. And I think that's, you know, at least besides cleaning up the air chain, I think just the training class itself has actually helped a lot of people kind of learn, you know, what the proper level is for radio.
Yeah. Yeah. Your audio program there is the, and I'm sorry if you already said this, is the music quite varied in what you play?
Yeah, we have probably a little bit of everything. Almost every 2 hours is a new music changeover. So
we start from
it sounds pretty much like typical college radio. We start in the morning, 7 to 9 a.m. with our morning show. 9 to 11 a.m. we do our Top 40 show. 11 to 1 p.m. we do our Alternative Nation show. 1 to 4 we do jazz. 4 to 5:30 we do our classic rock programming. 5:30 to 6 we do our news program. And 6 to about 7 is really where we have our community focused radio. And then 7 o'clock on, we do Airwave, sports, Airwave, which is coincidentally the name of the board, but Airwave is also kind of like indie rock music show. And that pretty much runs from most of the night until about 11 o'clock, where we start doing country music. And over the night, we do Aggressive Edge and different type of grunge music, per se. And that just keeps going 24 hours.
You mentioned that the first audio processor in your chain is a compeller. I guess that's an Aphex compeller, right?
I believe so, yeah.
And that is a great box for a station where you're never quite exactly sure where the level's going to be, because in the industry, it's always been known as the processor that is good at taking any crazy input level and giving you something reasonable out without really affecting the sound or the timbre of the programming. And I remember being at a station, a commercial station in Memphis, talking to the engineer, and the first thing in his chain was an Aphex compeller. And he looked at the compeller and he says, "Oh, look, Tom must be on the air." I said, "How do you know?" "Well, look what the compeller's doing. He's running it, wide open. I mean, he's really hitting it hard." So, yeah, but he had the compeller for the same reason. So if you're coming out of the compeller left and right, is your transmitter there at the studio, or is it offsite?
No, actually, coincidentally, transmitter is actually across the street. So Hofstra, for those who don't know, is split into studio Campus North and Campus South. So Campus North, which is across Hempstead Turnpike, as we're divided by a major road, Campus North is all the dorms. And actually, through Jeffrey Krause, as Chris mentioned before, he actually got the university to put our transmitter, 4-bay antenna, on top of one of the residential buildings, and it's on Tower C. Constitution is actually, I believe at the time, was one of the highest points in Long Island. And actually it sent, believe it or not, fiber from our studios across the Hempstead Turnpike back up to Constitution.
Gotcha. Okay. So how is it that you're getting your left and right audio over to the transmitter, where I think you said your main audio processor is?
Yeah. So through after it leaves the compeller, it goes through the Probel router. From our router, it goes into our fiber box, and we actually send the fiber across Hempstead Turnpike, which was installed. Thankfully, some people may know Hofstra from having the debates we had in 2008 and 2012 for the presidential debates. And I believe through the 2008 debate, they installed the fiber box that actually gets it up to Constitution. And from Constitution, we then convert it back into left and right, and then through the Omnia processor.
Gotcha. So with a setup, now a lot of folks are able to rig up some kind of a backup link between the student and the transmitter side. Sounds like you don't have that opportunity there. This link.
Surprisingly, the original connection up there was actually copper. So that is still in place, and there's actually a relay up there. So we do feed the analog copper straight up. Thankfully, that's run by the university, so if you have any problems with it, they can pretty much repair it if need be. But it's so for the most part, we have a relay up there that after if the fiber dies for whatever reason, within about, I think, half a second, it kicks over to the analog. You do hear a little drop in level, but you're still on the air, and it still sounds pretty good.
Oh, that's fine. We're doing so much digital nowadays and so many applications, but there's nothing wrong with a nice balanced pair of copper wires.
Yep, not at all.
And you terminate each end with a good quality transformer. Everybody's favorite is typically the Western Electric 111C transformer. And that thing was pretty flat up to 50 kilohertz. So it's a good sound. Yeah, that can be a very good sounding system. Wow. So after that, you go into an older Omnia processor, and then tell me about what's after that. Tell me about the transmitter.
So we actually very nicely just got donated from the Omnia processor. Just got donated a believe it is a Harris Digit CD FM exciter, which we just got put in. Yeah, Harris Digit CD FM exciter, which just put in. That puts out about 10 watts, and then we get it set into a Broadcast Engineering FM 200C process. Transmitter, which bumps it up to about 250 watts out.
Gotcha. So what class of station is that? It's in the educational band, right?
Yeah, it's in the education band. I want to say we're class C. I would have to look it up.
Maybe Chris would know. I don't know. C's are typically 100,000 watts, so it's typically an A that's lower. Or it may have been some
A.
Yeah, maybe some other class that I'm not aware of. It's been there a, a long time, though.
Yeah, no, we've been on the air for a long time. Let's see if I can look us up.
So this, you said there's a four-band tent on top of a dorm. Do people ever raise questions or concerns like, oh, what's all that, you know, I'm getting hit with all that RF energy?
Actually, we're a class A station, I found out, actually. We're a class A, yeah, non-commercial class A. Actually, I think a lot of that has kind of gone away. Most people just don't notice, which is really funny, because whenever we have to go in through the dorm security to actually go up to the transmitter room, there's been plenty of times where, like, yeah, we have to go up to the transmitter, and they're like, you have to go where now? I go, yeah, we got to go up to the 13th floor, and which is a common room in the building, and they go, there is no rooms on the 13th floor. I go, I know, there's a transmitter room on the 13th floor. We need to go there. And I cannot say, we've had public safety called on us probably about 3-4 times. And public safety knows it exists, but the people that run the doors just have no idea, which is pretty funny.
That's great. That's great. All right. Hey, we are talking. First of all, you're watching This Week in Radio Tech or listening to it. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Chris Tobin, and Mark Silverman is our guest. Mark is the student technical director at WRHU-FM at Hofstra University. And I love talking about, you know, engineering with younger engineers. I used to be one. And so it's just great to hear about, you know, the excitement, the passion that younger engineers like Mark have for learning about the technology that we use to make, you know, hopefully great audio come out of people's radios and all the stuff that goes into that. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by the folks at LAWO. That's LAWO. So if you go to their website, it's LAWO, LAWO.com. It's a German company. Maybe that has something to do with the pronunciation. Philip LAWO is there. He runs the company now. LAWO, if you're not familiar with them, they make really big audio consoles, big, expensive, gorgeous audio consoles. But they also have a line of smaller consoles for radio broadcasters. And they have a console they introduced 1 year ago at the NAB show in 2014. And I understand they've made some improvements to it now, some software tweaks and such. If you're coming to NAB, I encourage you to go to the LAWO booth and have a look at it. Michael Dosh is in charge of virtual radio products at LAWO. And on their website, we just saw a moment ago, on their website about the crystal clear console, there's a video there, Michael Dosh giving a tour of how this console works. And yeah, I think this is really fascinating. Of course, the console has, like so many consoles do nowadays, it has a rack-mounted mixing engine. In this mix engine, this is where you bring in your microphones, your analog stereo sources or mono, your AES, EBU, digital sources come in to the back of it as well. Up to 24 sources can come into the back of this one rack unit. It's pretty small, one rack unit mixing engine. There's also Ethernet ports on the back, and that's you can make it compatible with Ravenna or AES-67. That's what's part of the Ravenna spec includes most of what AES-67 is. And so you can plug right into the rest of an AOIP environment using AES-67, or if you have other Ravenna equipment, you can plug right into that as well on your network. So the mixing engine, of course, it does all the mixing, but how do you control it? Well, that's pretty cool, because at LAWO they have a standard, you know, hardware controller. It's their crystal console, but they have another way to control it. It's called their crystal clear console. This is actually a PC running Windows 8 and running an app, and the app is a full screen audio console, and they make this run on a touchscreen that is a multi-touch touchscreen monitor. So this means you can take 2, 3, 4, up to all 10 fingers. It's a 10-touch touchscreen, and move faders, push buttons, do all your mixing right there on the screen. Now, more folks are getting used to this. There's another application where BSI, the automation company, made an on-screen iPad application. And so more people are getting used to this concept, and the folks at LAWO have really made this work well. The buttons, for example, if you build a console entirely in software, well, you can have all the buttons be entirely context-sensitive. That means you push a button to change an option, and that button only gives you the options that are applicable to what you're doing. So if it's a microphone, if it's a codec, if it's a hybrid, when you push an options button to make a little change, it has for you the changes that are applicable to what you're doing. There's not a lot of stuff to ignore, in other words. Of course, you can have presets for the scenes for the console. You can, if you mess up the console in some way, whoops, what did I push? I don't know. There's a panic button. It just restores the console to how you were using it before you messed it up. So it's really cool. It's, again, touchscreen, multi-touch, I hear that people like this thing. You want to check it out, do so at the Lavo website, lawo.com. Look for radio products, and then look for the crystal clear audio console. And hey, if you're at NAB, I encourage you to stop by the Lavo booth, meet Michael Dosh, and let him show you around, give you a tour of their virtual radio products, including the crystal clear audio console. Thanks, Lavo, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, here we are. It's Kirk Harnack in Las Vegas at the world headquarters of South Seas Broadcasting and Delta Radio. It's a couple stations that I'm involved with. Chris Tobin is here as well from IPcodex.com. And Chris is back in some switch room somewhere, aren't you, Chris?
It's the terminal room, servers as well as FTP server, email servers, automation system servers, satellite downlinks. So what else we got here? STL audio, T1 frames. Yeah, it's a pretty busy room.
And also, over your shoulder, I'm not sure which it is. To me, it's your left shoulder. There's an audio generator, and looks like, hey, if we need a tone on the show, you're going to be able to give it to us.
Absolutely. This is the classic Potomac audio generator, AG51. Yes. Look at that. Come on now. I also have the analyzer down below on the floor.
It's a beautiful nice prop, man.
I'm telling you, people don't realize how good these things are.
Oh, they are.
All right.
Hey, and on the show here, our guest is Mark Silverman. Mark is the student technical director at WRHU at Hofstra University. Now, Mark, you've run us through a little description of the consoles, a little bit of your routing situation, and then your audio processing and transmitter. We were just talking about the antenna when we had to take a break there. But you know what? I'm so close to being out of battery that I'm going to have to let you and Chris talk for a while, and I'll be back in a few minutes. I was thinking that you guys could start to delve into this subject of engineers learning engineering. Mark, where are you stubbing your toe? You know, what things to trip you up, and what things, you know, are you really excited to learn about with enthusiasm? You guys take off, and I'll rejoin you in a few minutes.
Sounds good. All right, Mark. So let's see. Let's think of this. Your first week on the job, so to speak, at the radio station. And were you working side by side with somebody like Mark Wiener or anyone, or no?
Yeah, originally we were working with our previous chief engineer, Joe DeRosa, and then we started kind of working and being fed in with Mark Wiener, who's currently our interim chief audio engineer.
Okay. So your first week or two at the station, what did you encounter? What was the thing that you remember the best, because it was just something so out of left field because you're not familiar with it?
I think the thing I remember the best actually was being introduced to the routing panel for the first time, and the whole concept of doing a mix minus, especially we have the wonderful opportunity to have the New York Islanders and actually broadcast their games on our station, and the whole concept of using ISDN and a mix minus feed to them through the router panel was probably the one thing I remember the most, and surprisingly the one thing I actually had the most trouble with first understanding. And then now I look at it and I go, okay, this needs to go here, here, and here. But I believe that was really the first week I was like, whoa, this is pretty incredible. And then not to mention the fact that with our audio console, having automation, and when I was done doing our tracking hour, which we do through our training class, having to put it in an automation and realizing, hey, the radio station just kind of runs itself. No one, you know, as long as the two faders are up, the thing will just go. That was pretty, pretty, I guess, eye-opening for me.
Oh, good, because that's the same thing that most people who start in the business, whether it be non-commercial or commercial, experience the same. So that's a good feeling. But yes, working with a routing switcher can be an interesting experience, because you have to understand the difference of source and destination.
Yeah.
And which button do you press first? Is it the source or the destination?
Ours would be the source first, because we have a preset window. So you pick the source, and then there's each panel. This one's a four panel behind me, four panel destination. And then you figure out what you want. But it's the source first and destination. Which is really confusing when I studied for TV, because TV, our old, we had a PESA router on the TV side, and that used to be destination first and then source. So that would always trip me up trying to go back and forth between the two.
Right. Well, that's like in the old days of audio patch bays. The top row of the patch bay was typically the output, bottom row was the input, And yeah. over time, they sort of got transposed. So if you're somebody who did a lot of work with patch bays, you made the assumption that the top row was the output, you'd be breaking audio circuits and going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that's good. That's good. So now, at the students at WRHU, who else gets to work with you and people learning? I mean, I know you have the sports crew that goes out and sets up on the road. Do you get to work yep. with other students? And which programs are they participating in or curriculums at the university to help them along by working at the radio station?
So a lot – most of my friends are either journalism majors either journalism majors. There's a few audio radio majors, and a lot of them are also TV majors. So pretty much everyone in the station is within the school of comm. But for the most part, engineering really for me is open to anybody. I've always had it. The most people that I work with specifically is the sports people, because they're the ones who actually take the equipment the most and go out and actually have to come back and, you know, and remote into the studio for the most. And they're the ones that kind of – I got to give them a quick nickel and dime tour of the audio board, how to set up a mix minus route for us for ISDN and whatnot. They're usually the ones that use the equipment the most. However, we do some music events. We do some music events. We do news events a lot. We do election nights, local elections. 2 years ago, I was invited to go to cover Bill de Blasio's election here in New York, which was pretty cool.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Well, you work alongside some of the industry's well-known journalist Ed Engels.
Yeah.
Those of us who are in the New York City metro are quite familiar with the name, and when they hear the voice, they know he's one of many legacy journalists here in the city. I'm curious, what do you take away from sitting and talking with Ed? I know what I've taken away because I've talked to him on many occasions, but what's it like to be able to sit with someone coming from a background of, say, zero, not really having everything for broadcast, and sitting with a gentleman who has seen, who has reported, who has had the opportunity to participate in life moments over the last 30, 40 years? I mean, what's it like to be able to sit there and have a one-on-one in an environment that just allows you to act like a sponge and absorb everything?
I have to say, it's absolutely incredible. I have absorbed as much as I could from Ed, as much as, you know, Ed is every day full of news stories. He's done so much with everything. He's been pretty much every major event in the last 30, 40 years he's had a part of. And honestly, for us, the students, and myself included, we've learned so much. We've grown and how to improve our on-air quality and just vocal speaking techniques, everything that he's taught us, which has been really amazing. I don't think that I may be a little biased here coming, you know, being a Hofstra student, but honestly, I don't think I would get the same experience at any other college radio station, mostly just because of Ed and the amount of alumni we have that come and help us back. And Ed, I have to say, has – every day he has a new story for me of something he's done, and he's told me stories. He had lunch with Malcolm X and all these things. And then to him, it's like nothing. It's like, oh yeah, I did that a couple years ago. And to us, it's just like, wait, you did what now? With who? How did this happen? And honestly, he's just so full of joy, and he loves what he does and working with us. And honestly, I think to him, and he just loves to give back to us and actually see the next generation of broadcasters grow.
Excellent. Well, yeah, Ed is, for those who don't know, Ed is formerly, actually probably still working with, he's from the WCBS News Radio 880
yep.
here in New York
yep.
City. It's the old news station. I had the honor of working with his counterpart at the rival across town at one time, 1010 Winds, Stan Brooks. And Stan and Ed Engels come from a period of time in journalism that I think is something we won't see much of. And your opportunity to talk with Ed and hear about Malcolm X is what I experienced with working with Stan Brooks
yeah.
when he would tell me about his time at Attica in New York, the prison riots, and being tear gassed and what it was like, and to name a few things. So I can appreciate what you're experiencing and talking with, and me being working in a professional environment with folks like Ed's caliber is just, it's priceless. So, you know, take advantage of it. He is definitely one person that loves to just, you know, pass the torch. He's a great guy to know and work with. So that's really good. So at Hofstra, when you're working with students or learning, I guess, what can somebody take away? You're at the university, you're a student at the university, you're part of the journalism or communications curriculum. Where can you see yourself going after you've learned, you've worked a couple of years at the station, you've worked different departments? Name some folks, if you can, have moved on and, have enjoyed the fruits of their labor.
Sure. So our graduate we had about, I believe he's a year out now, Kevin Dexter, who is now doing updates. He works at News 12 here on Long Island doing sports updates. He does actually weekends and overnights for 1010 Wins doing sports updates. I'm trying to think who else we've had come out. I mean, our list of alumni, even in the past, we've had a ton of people. One of the most famous people that we've had, and his name is escaping me now, which is kind of embarrassing. That's going to bother me. I'll probably have to get back to that. But really, what's nice about WRHU, especially being in the New York market, is you are right as soon as you get out of the training class, you are on the air. You can do whatever you want, any kind of department. And what's really nice is this is the only place to me that you can really get pre-professional development. And we treat it as such. We treat it like a real, you know, 100,000-watt flamethrower radio station. And you can come out of here and say, hey, I've worked in New York, you know, in a New York City market on a real non-commercial radio station, not to mention we've won the Marconi Award this past year, and say, hey, I can work. I know what I've done. This is what I've done. I have on-air product to show you and actually show you what I've done. And this is the type of tools that I've worked with. And what's really nice about Hofstra is we, you know, WRHU and Hofstra give you the tools to work. And basically from what I see here is pretty much the same thing I see out in the real world. So, you know, the transition period is nothing. And to an employer, to me at least, that's great. You know, they say, hey, you can do this already. You're hired for the most part. And you got to pay back that piece of paper, as they say.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, it's good to know that you have folks like Bruce Avery and John Mullins who are from the industry who help you, you know, help the students understand what it is that you'll need, the tools or, you know, the skill sets, as the phrase would be, as to how to make it. And you're right. I worked with a college university in New York City, a city university many years ago, and we had a lot of students graduate and move on to places like Z100 in New York City, Power 99 in Philadelphia, Sirius XM Radio to this day. And they, too, benefited from a curriculum that sort of mimicked the commercial world without the commercials. So it's good to see that WRHU is utilizing the same template and getting the same results. So it's that's nice. Now, with technology shifting and changing the way it has been for everybody, both at home and in the workplace, how have you guys at the radio station managed to sort of take advantage of the new technologies, or at least learn them, or be aware of them, or mix your old legacy stuff with the new stuff? Because I know a lot of stadiums that you probably go to or venues that have rebuilt their facilities may not have ISDN or POTS anymore as we used to know them.
Yeah, that's been a struggle, especially at the university level. We really don't have that big of a budget, per se. So a lot of times we are doing things on a shoestring and a prayer for the most part. We do try to keep our equipment, you know, up and running with what we have. But especially with ISDN, what we've run into, thankfully, most hockey arenas that we've had to go to all have ISDN. However, we have run into an issue, and I know you know this story, Chris. We actually were doing a game in New Jersey, and we had our ISDN lines cut. And we slowly, you know, over the past couple of years, the NHL has been talking about moving to an IP-based system. We've done for our basketball remote broadcasts, especially now that these older arenas just kind of don't have the ISDN or the POTS, as you say. We've now used through Musicam's Road Warrior and Suprema's have been able to do IP remote broadcasts, which has been really awesome. And the quality was tremendous. And especially when we had to do New York Islanders hockey on IP because the ISDN lines were cut, that quality was probably the best sounding I've heard the Islanders, connection wise, since I've been doing the games. And especially when the ISDN lines are not that reliable, the IP has really come in handy.
Well, you know, things have changed. It makes sense. Oh, Kirk's back.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I've been listening for a while. That's fascinating to hear you say that because, you know, the industry impression is that IP is not as reliable as ISDN.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, at Telos, because the company that I work for full time, because we have a support department that gets lot of phone calls, a lot of inquiries. Mm-hmm. How do I fix it? You know, believe me, we know that ISDN has plenty of problems. And as all the engineers at the telcos retire, go away, get laid off, whatever, it's going to have more problems. And the key to IP, and Mark, maybe you can tell us a bit about your experience. The key to IP is understanding how it works so you can understand how to work it. When it has a problem, you have some tools to figure out, okay, is this my problem Or is it this particular carrier? Or should we just, you know, disconnect and try again? Should we try a different carrier? But maybe you can take me through some of the things that you learned, and maybe you and Chris learned together about hooking up and then troubleshooting IP audio connections.
Yeah, definitely. Because I know, like you were saying before, we're very lucky that we still have ISDN, and we have people that actually can service the ISDN lines here. Thankfully, there is someone fully on staff at Hofstra or through the Hofstra telco that can still do ISDN. But, I mean, we were talking to Verizon not too long ago. We had to do a remote up in the Baseball Hall of Fame, and Verizon was very hesitant about installing an ISDN line. They wound up doing it, but they were saying, listen, you know, this is really it. There's not, you know, you really can't get it anymore. In terms of what we've done with IP, all of this entire basketball season we've done, we've gone to arenas in the CAA, which is Colonial Athletic Association, which Hofstra participates in, down in Virginia. We went as far as, I believe, wasn't this year, maybe I think last year we went as far as Texas. And really, IP, we've run into our walls. A lot of it is when we connect with these universities, we're running through their sports information director. And for our problems, for the most part, we say, hey, you know, we kind of know our device needs to go on this port, and we need to make sure that, you know, we're not going to be blocked by a firewall because it's not really a computer. However, it is a Linux box and it only does audio. It can't, you know, create viruses on your network. And really the issue we've run into a lot of times is it's trying to translate it from the SID, the sports information director's position, up until the IT manager. And really, when we've gotten to sites where it's worked great, they got that information across, and then we've run into sites where they had no idea what we were talking about, and their only suggestion was we can give you another port. And really, in that point, you know, we've done troubleshooting. Unfortunately, we've had to do games on Wi-Fi, which have been iffy. But once we've done the troubleshooting, and we've kind of gotten it down to a science now where we know what we need, and we know for the most part who we have to contact to get that information to them. And ever since we kind of did the troubleshooting of figuring out what we have to translate to them and kind of the correct wording, I would say, of making sure that they know that, you know, this isn't going to cause any viruses. You don't have to throw up 8 red flags on your network. It doesn't, you know, as long as you put us into the DMZ, you know, we're pretty much good to go and we won't really bother you after that. And after we got that taken care of, for the most part, we've been pretty much good to go. We did actually... Hofstra was in the – well, Hofstra's women's basketball team was in the CAA championships from Upper Marlboro, Maryland, which is an arena called the Showplace Arena, which has been around for I think the early 30s or 40s. Don't quote me on that. But they only had Ethernet. They did not have ISDN. They did not have POTS, and we were trying to get in contact with them, and it turns out it worked really well, and it stayed up the entire 3 hours, 4 hours that we did a broadcast, and it was sounded really good.
I think one of the things that I like, and I'm sure Chris Tobin feels the same way, one of the things we like about IP is that, you know, after ISDN has been around for 20 plus years, and it's not technically any better than it was 20 years ago. It's exactly the same. Now, one of the nice things about it is, okay, there's a point of demarcation. For the engineer, if it doesn't work, not my problem, not my fault. Well, maybe my problem, but it's not my fault. And you call the telco and you say, here, make it work at this point.
Right.
And oftentimes they would. But with IP, you got to take more responsibility than before, and maybe you got to deal with other IP, you know, IT personnel who don't really get what you need it for. But if you get that solved, guess what? You can do not 128 kilobits per second. You can be doing 256 or 384, or we've even, you know, done plenty of experiments in some remotes with linear audio at 2.5 megabits per second. So, you know, the possibilities for quality improvement are just really fantastic. So that's – I think it's worth the effort. And we're going to reach a day when this just becomes so standard. Hey, Mark, before you got involved with ISDN, I mean, it used to be that ordering ISDN was a super pain. And I wish I knew the history, but somehow they came up with ordering feature set S, as in Sierra. And if you ordered that, you know, your ISDN would be provisioned correctly. Well, we need a feature set S for IP. Something that I found often works is tell the IT guy on campus, look, what I'm hooking up is similar to a VoIP phone. And if it works for a voice over IP phone extension to the outside world, it's probably going to work okay for us. Maybe a higher bit rate.
Some of the problems we've had some of the problems we've really had with Hofstra, you know, with just IT in general, not only Hofstra, is they don't – a lot of people, and I'm sure you guys have run into this, they don't understand the concept of what you need for broadcast IT and what you need for, you know, regular computer IT networks. A lot of times they are two separate networks. I know Mark Wiener, who I work with here, who used to work at CBS, told me that when he was at CBS, they have a department dedicated strictly for broadcast IT and a department for everybody else, like, you know, everybody else and sales – you know, all that department. I think that's really kind of blended in recent years, especially at, you know, at least at Hofstra, or, you know, when we've tried to get ports open at Hofstra, they wouldn't do it. We wouldn't, they wouldn't even let us install our own web streaming servers. They wanted complete control. They wanted specific specifications. So we said, okay, fine. So we actually went outside, brought in Cablevision, which is the local ISP here, and we've been able to, you know, control our own infrastructure. And we're one of the only – actually, I think the only place on campus that's allowed to do that, mostly because Hofstra didn't want to open the ports and they were too afraid of this and then that.
And, yeah, Chris, I think that's a great solution for a lot of folks. I know I've been to a couple of commercial broadcasters whose IT department, and, you know, I get it, the IT department is responsible for not letting a virus come in, you know, for complying with various laws for publicly held companies, and they, you know, they got to understand, and they understand, you know, desktop computers and OSs and servers, they don't necessarily get an appliance that's going to be doing some UDP packets back and forth. So I get where they're coming from. But I think a great solution for a lot of folks is to give me a separate drop. And it's not part of the campus network at all. You're not responsible. Let me have a cable TV or a DSL drop. Chris, what do you think about that solution?
Yeah, no, that's perfectly normal. I mean, as networks and IP becomes more prevalent, it becomes the mainstay, which it pretty much is. Proper network management requires you either create VLANs within your physical network or you create two physical networks. And Mark is correct. At CBS, they do have various departments for various business units. I can tell you that the news division has its own IT group with its own IT, with its own network, which has VLAN capability across to the corporate WAN. But then within the corporate WAN, there are a group of folks who specialize with the broadcasters. And then there's a group that specializes for what we'll call the office environment. I worked with all three of them, so I know. And it works as long as the people involved, usually the managers, because they're the ones that have to ride herd, explain to the folks on the front line, here's what this is all about. One thing I always tell folks, and I told this to Mark and Mark Wiener, who works with him, I said, when you guys are doing stuff and trying to figure out a way to get where you need to go with your IP, just tell the person who's being the, how would you say, the obstacle, that what you're doing is tied to revenue and you need to get this to work.
Yeah.
Ah, yes, it's tied to revenue.
I'm not saying that in a bad way. It's true.
Yeah.
The problem is people look at these IP things, IT, and they don't attach the revenue portion to it. It's like, hey, I'm running an automation system, but I'm the computer guy. But I can tell you that 99% of the computer guys managing these automation systems in radio and TV don't connect the dots as far as, hey, if this automation doesn't properly play out what it is you're doing, audio, video, or combination thereof, money is lost. That's the part that still doesn't seem to be permeating, you know, bubbling to the top for a lot of folks. So what Mark's talking about when he goes to a place and says, hey, this box does this, it doesn't really, is not a security threat or a vector for security issues. If you're not talking to someone who understands the business at hand, and I'm not saying just servers, but the bigger picture, you know, what you're doing with this technology, you're going to run into a problem. And you can ask for a separate port or a spigot. I always tell people, I said this to Mark and the guys at Hofstra, I said, call up the place, two questions. One, do you manage a DMZ switch for vendor access? If the answer is no, then you say, do you manage policies on your firewall for special ad hoc connections such as what we're going to do? If the answer is yes, Mark has the sheet, you give him the information, the ports, the protocols, and usually, and Mark can say whether it's true or not, 9 times out of 10, or maybe 8 times out of 10, you get through without issue.
Yeah, I would say we have a pretty good success rate. Once we give the ports out and they pretty much say, okay, you know, fine, we're not responsible if it doesn't work, but, you know, here you go. We'll get it configured on our end. And for the most part, we've been good to go.
Yeah, if you get the person that knows what they're doing and you're giving them ports and protocols, they should look at you and say, oh, all right, great. I can lock down this access to just these ports and protocols.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
And technically, that's what you're supposed to do. And as Kirk, as you pointed out, you know, IT people are concerned with security. A true security IT person will say, if this is all you need, then I can configure this access just for that and protect my network. So if you run into people that don't do that, then you know, you're right. You're going to be you can run the gamut of who knows what's going to come out of that.
Yeah.
So you have that conversation about specificity of what you need for ports being forwarded and open to you know, this IP address, or even you could supply the MAC address of the device that you're going to bring if you had to do that. But you're right, that does supply – that can supply a better security scenario than they thought they would have.
Well, yeah, the MAC address should be the second question they have for you after they ask you what protocols and ports. Can I have the MAC address? And that's what they'll go by. We've made it
standard on emails now when we email to our sports information director and say, hey, this is our unit, and we know that these places, every time we go, here, this is our unit. And in the email, just the initial email, we said, this is the MAC address here. You know, get it. Let us know when you're set to go if you have any other questions.
Yeah. Hey, to our viewers and listeners, this is the program This Week in Radio Tech, where we talk about radio technology. And we're having a great conversation with Mark Silverman, the student technical director at WRHU-FM at Hofstra University in New York State. We're coming to the close of our show. Guys, I'd like for both of you to hang on here and be ready to hand out a tip for our viewers and listeners. Chris, you're usually just full of tips. And let me explain this to Mark. Mark, think of something. And hey, you know, it may be something that's you think is mundane or something that you just learned. But I want to know about, you know, how if you could give some advice to some engineers, some fellow engineers, about how to fix something. Something you've come across here just recently, maybe. Mm. Or an old trick you've always thought, hey, I know how to do this. This is my MacGyver move, you know. Hang on. We'll get to that in just a moment. Our program is brought to you in part by the folks at Telos and the Axia division at Telos. But I want to take a moment to tell you about some of this being the 30th year that Telos has really been around. I want to brag a little bit on some of the things that Telos has done in 30 years. First of all, Telos, if you didn't know this, Telos absolutely has the largest audio R&D, research and development group in the broadcast industry. And we have for a number of years in the audio R&D department. Telos has a bunch of engineers in Cleveland, Ohio, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania now, in Germany, in Latvia. We have some engineers working out of China and a couple of sharp guys in Ukraine. So Telos really has got it together as far as R&D, working all the time and figuring out better ways for all these engineers to work together toward good common goals. Telos also, the Telos Alliance, has a large and growing intellectual property portfolio, including multiple patents and trademarks. And this is very cool. This means that Telos can do some things in ways that nobody else can do. And that means that, you know, some Telos products are extraordinarily innovative in how they get a job accomplished. And as a customer, as an engineer, you know, that can make you look really good. Telos was the Axia division was the inventor, actually, of audio over IP that worked for the broadcast environment. Yes, there was audio over IP before, but it really wasn't useful at all in a live broadcast environment. So we have audio over IP now in the form of what we call LiveWire Plus. It's also the basis of the AES-67 standard. So that's pretty amazing. And LiveWire Plus fully incorporates AES-67. Telos is the winner of multiple prestigious radio and TV awards, including a Technology and Engineering Emmy Award. Our Linear Acoustic Division has that award proudly displayed in its Lancaster, Pennsylvania office. We're not content to just improve existing products, although we do that. We focus on leading the way with innovations, always looking for new ways to improve broadcasters' workflow and efficiency. Now, you know, I know those are a lot of words that sound like PR words, but we really do. We sit around conference tables from time to time and look at what are the trends, what are people asking about that they want to be able to do, what can we offer them that they haven't thought of yet? You know, there's a phrase that gets bandied around, it's usually me doing it, around the office where I say, hey, Henry Ford said, if I had built what my customers asked me to, I'd have made faster horses. So you kind of get the analogy there. We're trying to come up with new ways of doing the things that engineers need to get done. Telos did have, in fact, the first DSP-based product in broadcasting, period. That was the Telos 10 telephone hybrid. The first licensed use of MP3, which was over ISDN, in the world. We were the first licensee from Fraunhofer. That was in the original Zephyr product from more than 20 years ago now. The first streaming audio encoder hardware and software in the Audio Active encoder. The first totally digital broadcast audio processor, and totally digital, I mean from input to output, and that was the Omnia FM. Finally, the first AOIP mixing console and routing system from Axia. So I just want you folks to know that there's a lot going on at Telos and the five different Telos divisions, Telos, Omnia, Axia, Linear Acoustic, and 25/7. Some amazing products are in the booth at NAB. And if you can't come to NAB, no worries. We'll be telling you about them here on this show and in a series of videos that will show up on YouTube and articles, too, from the Telos Alliance website and from the various newsletters. So just want to give you take a minute to pass along the things that Telos has done and the things that we're able to do now because of terrific leadership and awesome, just awesome engineering. We've got some of the best guys in the world. All right. Thanks very much, Telos Alliance, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I do appreciate it very much. All right. In the short time that's left, Chris Tobin, maybe you have for us a tip of the week you could pass along.
Actually, I do. It's a good tip. First of all, if you have critical equipment in your racks or in studios and you want to make sure that nobody pulls the plug or powers down the unit improperly, get yourself a nice fluorescent pink IEC connector. Okay, this is a short one.
Oh my goodness!
Trust me, this will be a way you tag it, but they'll see that there's something about this is different than all the others that are black in the rack. Very important. I've used it over the
years. Where do you get that? It looks like you got it at Claire's in the mall.
Yes, actually, it was Claire's, and no. At your electrical supply shop, the specialty places have it. The other thing to remind people of, now that we're in the world of LiveWire, LoopNet, Logitech stuff, Ravan, and everything else, the RJ45. The audio's blown out.
Look at that. How's that?
That's better.
There you go. So you have the familiar RJ45, correct? Now you take that RJ45 and put the end of it XLR connectors. Now, you say to yourself, what am I going to do with this? This is two open-ended connectors. This is useless. Now, we take the Studio Hub device and extend your connection through your Cat5 cable. And now, from your rack room down the hall to your studio where you may be doing some work, you now have the ability to test things without having to go crazy. And you use a handheld tester to make it happen. You see? Now, this may seem crazy and foreign to some folks, but trust me, today I just used this little bundle of wires to test out something in a studio down the hallway. And everyone looked at me like, what are you doing? I said, I need to test something real simple in the rack room from the studio. This is what we're going to do it. 50-foot cable, Cat5, and both ends had tip ring sleeve for the audio device. It happened to be a semi-pro. And the other end, XLR.
Yep.
I did not have to go underneath the console. I did not have to go through the cable tray. I did not have to try to figure out if the wiring behind me, if the documents were correct when I pull a punch out or try to punch across something. So that's my useful tip. But trust me, if you practice this occasionally, you'll have that one moment where, wow, this really saved my bacon.
Chris, thank you so much. And by the way, Skype has decided to boost your mic level unbelievably. So thanks for the tips. And you know what? What you were pointing out there, unfortunately you couldn't hear it, but the audio was horrible. You can just hold those things up, and I'm thinking like, oh yeah, Cat5 cable as a long stereo analog extension, or for AES, and just use those radio systems adapters at each end. So much more convenient than building up an audio test cable just for each specific purpose. So yeah, I keep some of those adapters in my tool set, and I haven't run one down the hallway yet, but yeah, I hear you better now.
Trust me, the hallway part really works well. I had the output of a CD player that needed to be tested. They claimed there was distortion. The CD player was at fault. And I said, well, let's verify that. The studio wiring documentation wasn't available, so I just grabbed the Rollercat 5, my adapters, plugged it in the back, ran it to the TOC where we have a monitoring station, a quality control station, and sure enough, that CD player was pristine. The issue was the input fader.
Yeah.
I didn't have
divide
to
and conquer. Yeah, divide and conquer. Even if dividing means running something down the hallway to put it on a great tester.
Exactly.
Awesome. That's awesome. All right, Mark Silverman, we're going to put you on the spot here and see if you can come up with a tip of the week to tell us about.
I don't know if I have a good tip as Chris, but my tip would probably be from Lisa, you know, coming, especially being young, is don't be afraid to ask questions. I know that's kind of the cliche one, but I cannot tell you the amount of things, especially coming into the radio station, I've learned by just saying, hey, what does that do? Why does it do this? And even just, you know, and talking to other engineers and figuring out new ways to get stuff. I've learned so much from Chris and the people I've worked with, Mark Wiener, Joe DeRosa at the time, and other people I've met in the industry, and just explaining things and just their experiences. And I know that maybe, you know, especially because I'm young, it may make a difference, especially for me, for learning everything that I can. But I honestly cannot tell you the amount of things I've learned by just saying, hey, what does this do? And more, you know, once I figure out what the device is, looking at this documentation and going, oh, that goes into this and this is at this level. And the fact that, you know, I don't think if I had ever asked as many questions as I have, I would be able to rattle off the entire air chain off the top of my head, you know, as decent as I can, you know, estimate certain model numbers. But I think just asking questions and also keeping in mind that, yeah, some of the stuff may be old. I mean, we don't have the greatest, you know, newest Omnia or the newest compeller. But at the same time, we can still get a great sounding sound on 88.7. And it's been really, you know, especially being a part of redoing our air chain has really made us sound really good.
That is great advice. Don't be afraid to ask questions. And I'll admit to you, I was, like many engineers, I was not formally trained in electronics. Yeah, I read some manuals, put some Heathkit stuff together. But you know, the best training I ever got, and this fall dovetails right in with your comment, Mark, is the best training I ever got was by calling tech support at a company you're probably not familiar with anymore, ITC3M. They made cart machines as well as some other things. Also Harris. Mm-hmm. And Orban, talked to these people, and I at least had the sense to kind of figure out what it was I didn't know and then ask about it. And I tell you, I give high praise to especially the guys at ITC about how – I mean, I was really – well, I don't understand what makes this solenoid pull up. I see this last transistor, but what turns that transistor on? Yeah. And the guy ran through the circuit for me. Same thing with some of the Harris techs. They would run through the circuit and tell me exactly, well, this is the modulator right here. And man, it was just great. Oh, you know who else did? They've been gone for a while. Marty Electronics, some of the techs in Cleburne, Texas at Marty Electronics talked me through circuits. And man, that's such great advice. Ask
and honestly,
questions.
Hands-on, like you were saying, ask questions and calling companies. I think for me also being hands-on, I've learned so much and being able to speak to these guys who have been in the industry for so long and just saying, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. This is how far I've gotten. Help me out here, kind of get, you know, to the end of it.
Great advice. Great advice. Thanks very much. Mark Silverman from WRHU, Hofstra University, the student technical director there. Mark, you've got a great career ahead of you. I think you can do anything you want to, and I'm glad that you're learning about audio and how we make things try to sound good in broadcasting.
Yeah. Well, thank you for
having
me tonight. Thank you so much, honestly.
And Chris Tobin, thank you for being with us, too. And, man, talk about MacGyvering a new situation there. You even downloaded Skype to a different computer just to be on the show when the first one wasn't working out.
No, that's you know, you got to be prepared. I don't like those 4 o'clock in the morning phone calls.
Hey, if I got something broken, I want you fixing it, man. Chris, I forgot to ask, are you able to get to NAB this year?
Yes, I'm flying out Sunday. I'll see you. We'll be able to do our thing on Thursday.
Oh,
do I need to bring a microphone or anything, or you have everything we need?
I think we're you know what? This Focusrite actually doesn't. We're going to gather around one mic apparently, unless I can figure something better out.
So, all right, do I need to bring a stick mic if we're going to stand up like we did last year or no?
Oh, you know, I do have a handheld.
I do have a handheld. That's right. I've got a handheld. Right. And you know what? It kind of depends on how much bandwidth we have in the TELUS Alliance booth. We've had some bad luck with bandwidth. We pay a lot of money and don't get the bandwidth that we deserve. Last year, it just so happened the booth across the street from us had fantastic bandwidth. So we did the show from there. So, you know, it's as usual, the situation is fluid. And whatever it is, we're going to have a good time doing it. I can assure you that.
I love it. I love it. Fluid moments. Okay. I've done many of those.
We might need some more MacGyver skills.
Okay. I'll bring my Verizon card.
All right. Great. Hey, our show's been brought to you by the folks at Omnia and the new Omnia 7 mid-priced audio processor. I'm getting one myself. Also from the folks at Lavo and the Crystal Clear audio console. And also brought to you by the TELUS Alliance and 30 years of engineering, innovation, and lots of industry firsts. So thanks to all those guys for bringing us, making possible this show. Also, thanks to Andrew Zarian at the GFQ Network. Andrew, sure appreciate you producing the show and being there and getting us distributed all over the world. So, Andrew, thanks very much. We'll see you next week live from the NAB show floor on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.